It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Cy White.
Howdy.
Hello, we thought why not dedicate our whole podcast to Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. We are going to be talking spoilers, but only up until Costa del Sol. I believe that's where you are right now. I don't want to go into the wider stuff, but I do want to delve into every single thing happening in this goddamn game, because there's so much here, whether it be like thoughts on the open world stuff, thoughts on the story stuff. We're going to do some story predictions as well, because right now we're both playing through it together. I'm a little bit ahead of you. I'm in like chapter 8 or something, and apparently there's 14 chapters in total. So I've seen a few things that you haven't seen, but I just thought we'll just get through some stuff. How are you finding it so far? Like, initial thoughts on everything?
I can't deny that I'm having a great time.
Good.
I really am just having a great time, and I recognize, and we'll probably get into it, that there are a lot of sort of things, holes to pick in this game. There are certainly some flaws, but as someone that loves the original Final Fantasy VII, just wandering, sort of ambling around, doing busy work, essentially, but with characters that I love and listening to music that I love, essentially, it's doing it for me. I've hit a point where I'm like, okay, the pace is grinding a little bit, but I'm looking forward to seeing what's coming next, because the game opens with a big like moment that they haven't followed up on at all in my playthrough yet.
Let's talk about that. So that's and I'll get back to this. Will be all over the place, but that's kind of the point. I just wanted to record the conversation me and you would have had anyway. We're only two people playing through it on staff at the minute. Josh is going to get there in time, and I'm sure other people will. But so the game opens on one of the most mind-blowing, like fascinating things, which is the idea of like this. Well, I mean, whatever you even think that is, like a parallel timeline. I have no idea what that thing is. Showing Zack cradling a dying Aerith as she dies in the way, like cinematography wise, it's shot the same way as her original death from the PS1 FF7, and the materia falls out of her hairband and all that kind of stuff, and it's like, what is that? Like, that immediately I was like, okay, so the scene from the end of Integrate doesn't happen, like, because at the end of Integrate the Zack that we saw went to the church and then looked through the doors and was shocked at what he saw, and it was all just people crying and stuff. But that can't happen anymore, because he goes straight to the helicopter and sees Aerith, and he sees the news report, so there's no reason for him to go anywhere else. So immediately I was like, this doesn't make any sense.
It's utterly mad. I know there was a lot of theorizing about timelines and split timelines and stuff within the community that I didn't necessarily keep up with, but I know it was a big debate going into the game. So right out of the gate, they've kind of at least laid some of the ground down for you to come to the conclusion, I guess, at least, whether that's true or not. But it's certainly designed to make you feel like that there's two timelines, because then it smash cuts to, anyway, here's Cloud and Aerith, who's still alive in the open world, breathing in the fresh air and stuff. So,
because they show like the bodies of the main party in the rubble, like, because I just can't, I don't know what your thoughts are on the general comprehension of what happened after Remake, but like, you have the whole bit where you're fighting destiny and time in midair and whatever else, and then like after the end of it, what happens, all the Tetsuya Nomura Kingdom Hearts stuff, once that stuff is like over, there's like obviously written Midgar is in rubble, loads of people are dead, like including the main party, and that seems to be the same timeline that Zack then arrives in, and he's got like Cloud on his shoulder and whatever. But like the way that it's shot, the fact that they show the main party and then they have the camera go down to showing Zack arriving, I was like, are they all in the same physical space, or are we in like two separate, I don't even know anymore. But
that's,
I was
the thing,
like,
Scott, I can't tell you, because the game has not gone back to it. I've put nearly 30 hours into this game and it's not come back up at all once, which is kind of an issue, but admittedly many of those hours are me just doing, as I say, busy work, climbing towers, killing specific monsters, playing Queen's Blood. Just going through, and I heard somewhere that the Platinum Trophy, not that I was necessarily intending on it, I'm not really an achievement hunter, but it takes like 150 hours.
Oh, God.
The rate that I'm going at, I'm doing everything in the game. Mm-hmm. I might get there, you know. Like, I'm knocking off everything, so.
There is one thing. It's the same as Remake. You've got to do the whole game again on hard to get the platinum.
No.
That was the thing that took me ages going through Remake. Was like, okay, I've ticked everything apart from the whole game again. But at least you can skip cutscenes the second time. It is worth saying that where I'm at, I've had more of the Zach scenes. I've had more of what's going on. But it's still very wondering what the full picture is kind of thing. Like, do you like that overall way they've approached it? That whole like almost MCUing of stuff, where you've got little teasers in the trailers and the footage before launch, and then you immediately you're hit up front with like, okay, this is some scene to get you thinking, and then we're going to go and do all the open world stuff. Do you quite like that journey that they're trying to put us on?
I can't honestly fathom it out until they give me more information to go on. It does feel a little bit whiplashy, and thankfully for my tastes right now, because it was just like, here's a scene anyway, forget about it, just run around and beat up monsters, I'm having a good time, because all I really want is a fancy museum tour of Final Fantasy VII in high definition graphics with a great battle system and some new dialogue for the characters that I like. When it actually gets to that point, and I got the feeling that it was coming from the pacing, the way the pacing has gone, we'll see how I feel about that, because that is absolutely the sticking point for me. And they handled some of it really well in Remake, but as you said, the Kingdom Hearts stuff at the end really threw me for a loop. I'm just glad that everyone's talking like human beings, and I can just wander around, you know, Junon area, whatever, like on my chocobo and that kind of thing.
My thing was like that whole bit at the end of Remake where they like fractured time, they made it to the Whispers with this manifestation of the idea of what Final Fantasy VII is supposed to be, like the core path the characters are supposed to be on, and then deviating from that and breaking away and justifying itself as a remake. I was like, I love all that stuff. Like
absolutely.
As a metatextual thing, that's really cool. I do think it's kind of jarring that at the start of Rebirth, they kind of barely acknowledge that what happened. And then you get a couple of lines of dialogue. Barrett says like he remembers like fighting Sephiroth, and he's like, we need to save the world when you're in the mines on the way to Junon. But it's like that's a weird whiplash to me, where I kind of thought back in 2020, I was like, how do you guys even go forward from here?
You feel like it's going to be like a big opening up of everything, and it kind of snaps back to being like, anyway, we're just going to follow the black-robed men, and that's essentially the story drive right now. And it's like, it is a little bit odd that they went pulled the lid off and then kind of just snapped it back on and went, actually, like, no, not yet.
No, my thing with the, like, those road people, they were in the original Seven, but they were nowhere near as big of a deal as they are in this one. And, like, they're in Remake, they show, like, Sephiroth can kind of appear as any of them. But it's, like, it's a weird thing. I think it's a weird beat in this. And, again, it's only spoilers until where Costa del Sol is. That, like, the whole story is just following these ambling dudes around. Yeah. Like, I just don't, I need more dialogue for why we're doing that. Like, it's because you have, like, the end of Remake, Sephiroth boss battle, whatever. And then, because the way that those dudes are portrayed in Remake isn't, like, they have all the answers or we should follow them or whatever. They're just kind of there. Like, Tifa even refers to one of them as like a guy that's lived next to her for years when you're in the slums. She's like, oh, that's Mr. Dukakis or whatever he's called, and he's been living there for ages. And I was just like, okay, but now they're like, they're all, they say reunion and they're mumbling and they're gonna do something, so we need to follow them. And I don't know whether they're doing like a two-phase thing where they're playing the card of this is the manifestation of the core path of the game, like what the original had with the Whispers. And it's like, well, we're supposed to go this location, this location, this location in this order. And that's the order that the black-robed people are doing it in. So like the party's following it without realizing they're actually conforming to the remake path.
Interesting. I mean, I was going to say, to be fair, the original game, the story drive is essentially kind of the same. We need to find Sephiroth. We've got very little to go on. Let's just head in this direction. Mm-hmm. So it isn't really like they've not taken anything away. But with it being, you know, a fully voiced, much more cinematic experience, it does feel maybe like there's a little bit missing. Some of the stuff they've inserted I really like, in terms of, and I know you and I probably almost had exactly the same thought about this. And for people that are, you know, following along with maybe Remake and Rebirth and maybe don't know the original game so much, there's some translation errors in that story and stuff that doesn't necessarily come across well, like the fact that Cloud and Party keep encountering Sephiroth, but it's not actually Sephiroth. It's kind of like an image of him projected by the Roadman, Genova, whatever, however you want to see it. They made that much more obvious this time. I was like, okay, that's... I wouldn't say gross overcorrection, but like they're like, look, this is like they made it really clear so they didn't screw that up. And another one that I thought was really interesting that was like they were going toward, there's one moment of the story where it feels like they're building towards a major change, and then they flip back. Where Shinra could just kind of like, do you know what? We're not bothered about Avalanche. Actually, if anything, maybe we should team up because Sephiroth destroyed Midgar, so he's our focus right now. And then something happens, and then they're suddenly like, actually, do you know what? Screw you guys. So well, I was like, that's really weird.
We can talk about that because that's still in Junon. Like, there's, yeah, the whole thing with Yuffie's, like, assassination attempt. Like, all the stuff with Yuffie, I was like, surely the Whispers should be interfering right now because you're not supposed to be here yet. Like, she's recruitable later.
No, that's the thing, because Yuffie's first sort of recruitable areas just before.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, it's just after you come out of the Mithril Mine, I think. So, like, technically that works. For me, the question is more like, when is she going to join the party, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a thing for you yet or... Okay, good. Because I'm like, come on, please.
We're never going to do plot spoilers past Costa del Sol. Many party members have been revealed in the trailers and stuff. I've just got Ketchy. So, like, yes. I'm like 25 hours in. Like, I'm like chapter 7 or 8.
I was going to say, you've got less hours, but you are definitely further along the game because, as I say, I've been doing every last little scrap. So. Mm-hmm.
But that whole thing of like playing with the sort of main timeline, playing with the canon, like, I think that's the most fascinating stuff. It's why I love all the Zack scenes. It's why I love the stuff in Remake, at the end of Remake, where they're sort of acknowledging that it's a new experience, but trying to like tribute both. I do think it's an incredible feat. Like, I do love the journey we're on. I was being like, or I am quite precious with like the feeling of Final Fantasy VII in terms of hitting those main beats, the story beats, the character reveals. And I kind of like, it took me ages to just accept, and maybe I don't accept it, how much they changed Sephiroth's reveal. Because like, he's, you know, in the original, it's just the sword out the back of the Shinra president, and that's why you get the flashback, and that's why we're chasing him, to get more information, to get back to Nibelheim or whatever. Whereas in this one, it's like, here he is, you've already fought him, you've just done the boss battle, and then in the way that Rebirth goes, because it's the middle chunk of that story, Sephiroth just kind of fades away anyway. Like, he's barely in the story. Like, you get the robed people, and occasionally Cloud sees him, but it's very, very rare. And that was such a weird feeling of like, oh man, people are missing out on this the way that it could be, and I needed to divorce myself from that entirely, which I have now. It's just taken me a long time
completely with you. I've said this before, you know, Final Fantasy VII, same for me, very precious about it, didn't want there to be a remake, but because they've gone, you know, this is a complete reframing of the story. This is not a remake, this is a sequel in a different timeline kind of thing. I can sort of let go of stuff like that. Like, it makes sense for Sephiroth to appear there because it's part of that new story where he's trying to mess with things to sort of get a second chance at world domination or whatever. So, yeah, I can take my hands off and be like, you know what? I'm just going to let it be what it is. And Final Fantasy VII, the original, is still the most important part of the story because Remake and Rebirth, as it's sort of sequels, can't happen without it. So
true. And it's like coming off Remake as well, like they are sequels. Like, they feel like fundamentally, they feel like they take place after, let's say, what's happened in the original one. Just quickly, what did you think of all this stuff? You know, back when there was the 10th anniversary and we got like Advent Children, Dirge, Cerberus, Crisis Core, where'd you come down on those things?
My opinions have changed over the years. I think I was really bang up for it at the time because I was really just excited about more Final Fantasy VII after what felt like a really long time, but in the grand scheme now is not a long time at all. I'm not really interested in particularly any of it. Advent Children's a feast for the eyes, but its story is absolute stupid and needless nonsense, as is most of the stuff they've added to it. I'm not a fan. Sorry, Zack fans. Couldn't
give
monkeys.
That's totally a feeling that I keep getting with this stuff, is that it reminds me of how pointless a lot of that 10th anniversary stuff was.
Yeah.
I know people love Crisis Core. I've never met a single human who likes Genesis, but there's probably people out there who like Genesis.
There's one. I know one at least. Right, okay. I don't understand it personally.
No. And it's like, to me, all the stuff that they added in like the 10th anniversary when they fleshed the world out, all the stuff with Zack and Crisis Core and like those characters, the Sviets and all the like, the, not just Soldier, there's the Sviets and all that kind of stuff. I was like, this just feels so needless. And to me, it's been hard navigating Remake and Rebirth with that feeling in mind of like, well, last time you guys did this, it felt so bloated and pointless. And like a lot of the stuff that's in Remake and Rebirth is bloated and pointless. It's not that it's not enjoyable and it's, you know, it's backed by gorgeous music and everything else.
Right.
But I keep having that feeling of like, does any of this matter?
Yeah. I mean, I suppose there's two different kinds, right? Because I'm concerned that they're going to start shoehorning in characters from the other games. Like, we saw some of that in Integrate.
Yeah.
Seen a little bit of it kind of implied so far in Rebirth. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I'm just on edge that they're going to start shoveling more of that into Final Fantasy VII that I don't want. If people like it, that's completely fine. I would just like it kept a little bit separate. Like, it can still exist. You just don't necessarily have to acknowledge it in this story. But I think the bloat in this game comes more from the world map. Like, here's a bunch of stuff to do, and you're like, okay. As I say, I'm doing it, and I'm having a good time doing it because the game's core is fun, and it's there's enough variety in there. Like, yes, it's always climb, go to a tower and push a button. I wouldn't even say climb because there's not much to
that.
No,
it's, yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, fight this specific enemy, as I say. But every area has got, like, a few dumb mini games and side quests that are, like, a interesting sort of distraction. The jumping thing. Couldn't finish that. Absolutely awful at it, but I had a great time with it. The music was amazing. And did you play the Fort Condor minigame at all?
Have I missed that? I thought that would be further in.
So, no, it's in the Junin area. There is a... what? You know, in the first area, there's... I can't remember what they call them. It might be... It's the proto thing.
The proto-relics.
Relic, that's it. Uh-huh. I want to say proto-molecule, but that's an Expanse thing. Shout out to the Expanse. The proto-relic, that in the Junin area is a completely different thing, which is the Fort Condor board game thing that you get sucked into. And now, since we're doing spoilers up to this point, I can spoil you. You become a polygonal chibi version of these characters. And you basically, as a player who have played the original FF7, you spend the whole time waiting for Cloud to do a shrug, right. And he does it. They know you're waiting. They know you're waiting for it. And they're like, there it is. So that was it's a good laugh.
That proto-relic thing, I did the first one in the grasslands, and the reward is like the little scene of like Gilgamesh or one of the summons.
Yeah, the next one's absurd. It's great.
Right. So I didn't, because when I got to Junon, because that's the thing, to me, there's been a notable split in my mentality where I love the opening, I love the Zack opening, and I like the flashback stuff, that was fine. I still prefer the OG treatment of Sephiroth and whatever.
Sure.
But then, like, and I liked that stuff, but then it was like the open world stuff, the grasslands, the Junon area, that's when it was the most just Ubisoft open world template stuff to me, where I was like, I'm running all the way here just to hold X, and I'm running over here just to pick something up, and I was like, oh my God, this is so... threadbare. And I wanted like more story propulsion to almost, I don't know, like make me feel like I could do those ancillary things, because at least we're going to get back to such and such. And so now where I am, and it's not spoilers, but like there was a notable pivot for me after Costa del Sol, and when you go to Mount Corel and all that kind of stuff. And so since then, I've been on board with like, I'm going to go and do everything. And so I have like a whole navigational thing where like that area that you mentioned in Junon, when we came out of the mines and the next story chunk was like, you can see the big cannon, Junon.
Yeah.
I was like, well, I want to be there really. So like, I kind of did like a few things, and I did that stupid stealth mission to get the chocobo, and then it, which was
rubbish,
terrible. And I was like doing that, and I was like, I did the stealth thing, I did a few fiend fights and whatever, and I was like, this is just crap, really. I want to get to the story.
I completely understand. The same thing where it's like, I see something and I'm like, oh, I want to see what happens next, but I can't help myself. Now I'm in. I'm like, I must go and do all this stuff. And I'm getting through it at a reasonable pace. The grasslands took me a long time, Junon not so much, but I'm glad to hear that the pacing picks up in terms of the story metering out. Maybe I can do a bit of that and then go do a few sort of side jobs and then come back. Maybe that's the plan. But yeah, I get it, because I've said to you before we recorded, I hit a bit of a weird choke point where you get on the Shinra 8 boat and it's like, right, now do the card game tournament. And the card game's awesome, by the way.
Yes.
But then it's card game tournament, fight an important boss. It's like, that was cool, but like pretty brief. And then after that, it's like, anyway, you have to do some more mini games before you carry on. And I was like, oh, come on.
We still got the mini games, because I feel like, again, this is a comparison only from the original, but in the original, you didn't have any mini games until the Gold Saucer. Like, you could have the bike section when you escape Shinra, but like, it wasn't like a let's chill here and have a bunch of mini games and take the pressure off and relax. Whereas, like, Costa del Sol is massively that. And the ship, even on the way there, is like, let's have a Queen's Blood tournament. And I'm loving Queen's Blood. I kind of hope they do an actual version of it.
Yeah, right.
But it's just that weird feeling of like, I don't know, if every location is like, here's your mini games, here's your Queen's Blood tournaments, like just every section is another golden saucer, or gold saucer, sorry.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's just a weird feeling, and it's like where I am now, like the gold saucer is this huge thing and whatever else, but there is a weird feeling to like trying to understand the pace of the game they've got, where it's like it opens in an area like Calm is like this massively detailed area with three people you can fight for Queen's Blood, and then when you want the next story beat, you go and do that, and then it's like open world chunk and then story chunk and then open world chunk and then story chunk.
Yeah.
And it's like, I just thought I had a hard time going like, what do you guys want to be? Do you want to be an Ubisoft open world? Do you want to be a story driven thing? You can kind of be both, but for the first few hours, I was like exhausted by that.
I get it. There is no restriction though. There's no stopping you just going story junk, and just ignoring all the open world. Like I don't think there's any minimum stuff that you really have to do.
Level requirements, I guess.
Other than, make sure you're of a decent level, but it's no requirement whatsoever. So that's good at least. There's no like areas where it's like gated by weird stuff. I was kind of worried at first when they said Queen's Blood Tournament on the ship. I was like, is this going to be one of those games where if you suck at the card game, you're just stuck here? But it is, even that's entirely skippable.
Like, yeah, you can say you forfeit.
Yeah. So with the exception, I think, of Costa del Sol, where you have to beat one of the mini games in order to progress, which is where literally the point I'm at. At least all the open world stuff is completely optional. You could just use it to level up and then carry on with the story. It is fairly basic, and my opinion might change when I am 150 hours in and every area has been do this one again, do this one again, do this one again with a slightly different aftertaste.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Maybe I'll feel differently about it depending on the pace. But, you know, I'm having a good time. That's the important thing.
That is the main thing. I think that does come through because it is just so charming. Like, it is just very, very well written. It's absolutely gorgeous. Like, the music's incredible, etc. Like, it is a nice time. I think one thing that, like, I think they've completely surgically stripped out of it is that feeling of, like, horror that was in the original. I know, me and you've talked about it before. I talk about it quite a lot on the pods. But, like, late 90s PS1 era had a lot of horror in it, whether it was in Metal Gear Solid or in Final Fantasy, obviously Resident Evil. But, like, there was a feeling, like an industrial feeling to Final Fantasy VII, like that you were going up against this machine that was Shinra, and I feel like they've really stripped that out. Like, Shinra is so goofy in this. Not that they didn't have goofy moments before. Obviously, you've got Palmer and Heidegger and everything, but that, if you compare it, kind of thing, it's way goofier this time.
Yeah, definitely two things on that. In terms of the horror, absolutely. Like, Genova looks like a Resident Evil monster. That's kind of great. But the actual sort of plotting to that point in the original game, the music kicks in. The place is empty. I'm fairly certain there's like a trail of blood again.
Yes.
It feels really oppressive. Whereas in this, it's just like chaos. There's monsters everywhere. People are running and screaming. It's like there's no big build up to it. It just kind of happens a little bit. In terms of Shinra, it's weird because there's a bit in Junon where you dress up as a Shinra soldier, just like the original. And then there's a sort of a new section where you've got a bunch of troops that you're commanding around and they're following you around. It's like, that's kind of fun. Except the entire point is it's trying to make you feel
like
something
have fun
for them.
Getting
like
a score.
Yeah. And Cloud's like, my soldiers at the end, and they all salute him. And it's like, no, wait a minute. These are a bunch of like, you beat up loads of these goons in the last game like they were nothing. And now you're mates with these ones just because you march with them for a bit. Like,
that
no,
whole area.
These are the fascists. That's the point of this game.
Because then after that bit, you do the big performance and everything, and they do the core. Da, 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 like, no, that doesn't get to be the fascist anthem.
No,
that's meant to be the Final Fantasy anthem.
Very true, yeah.
Like, what the hell are we doing?
Yeah,
like that
weird.
Whole thing of like trying to get a high score doing the best fash you can. I'm like, what is that? Like, final fascism. Like, that's not why I'm here. So that whole thing of like steering into that as much as possible. And like, it's anime, it's choreographed very well. It's very, very gorgeous. But that was such a weird beat of like that sort of approach that a lot of things have when they're dealing with any sort of media company dealing with an iconic property, where it's like, well, people remember the rifle twirl from the original FF7 on that part of the game. We should make a whole thing out of this.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's like, you didn't need to do that. You can, but I think to me, it's emblematic of the entire thing, where it's like, let's take the thing you know and just stretch it the hell out and maybe lose the meaning along the way.
Yeah.
But again, that could be me being way too precious about it. But that particular like sequence, I was just like, what are you guys trying to say? Like, we should be good little soldiers. Like, what is it? Are you? And because I was like, because at that whole sequence, Barrett is the one who saves Rufus, and I was like, but he's grew up hating Shinra, so why wouldn't he take the opportunity to just kill Rufus? I actually didn't get why he saved Rufus at that point, other than the idea of
they've softened it up a bit in general, haven't they? Because with Remake, they were like, let's blame the terrorism that we caused as Shinra on the organization Avalanche and make it look like they did terrorism. And it's like, in the original game, they just are terrorists.
Yes.
And that's kind of the point. Like, yeah. They address that even later in the story, where there's a moment where Barrett's like, maybe it wasn't okay for us to do those things because of all the poor people's lives that we put in jeopardy and stuff like that. It's like, it can be complex, but in this, they've shaved the edges off, as is the way.
Mm-hmm. And it's like that whole sequence with Barrett ends up making the save so that Rufus lives or whatever, and then like that whole bit, that was I think when me and you were messaging the other night, where I was like, I don't think I'm vibing with any of this stuff. Like I said, for me it hasn't really changed until after Costa del Sol, but yeah, stuff like that is that whole thing where I think they were a bit too focused on, let's take thing that people will know and make them do the Leo point to the thing, go, oh, I remember that from X many years ago, as opposed to like maintaining the message.
I worry that's why I'm enjoying it so much.
Right.
That's the thing, though. I'm
fully aware of that. Yeah.
Exactly. Obviously, a big part of it is nostalgia. What the game means to me, and what the characters mean to me, what the music means to me. The Genova boss fight kicked in, and I paused just so I could listen to the music for a couple of minutes, just to see, because that's a theme that's been, you know, remixed so many times. I was just curious how they were going to handle it, and it's a great piece of music. So stuff like that, that's what's like, I'm just, I'm loving this, I'm loving this. And I kind of hate that that's the case, but it is what it is, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the thing, is that I'm too aware of how much Square Enix have banked on that multiple times. Like when they did the Final Fantasy VII Battle Royale, and it was like, and you can play as polygonal, like Cloud and Barrett. And I was like, no, like you've got to treat this with care, kind of thing. And then they have that Ever Crisis mobile game where it's like, it's the original game retold, but you can pay to put characters in who weren't there before. And it's all canon. And at the beginning of that game, like it says, like, oh, you know, the live stream fractures and it's a multiverse and this is another way that the story could have gone. And I was like, oh my God, is this what we're doing for Rebirth as well, where it's all just kind of fractures of a multiverse? Maybe. But that whole thing of the way Square Enix has treated this property, and it reminds me of the Advent Children era, where it was like, yep, I can go for more of this, but you have to be aware of how much this means. And maybe it's just too much naked business at some point. Although it is counterbalanced by how much time and effort and everything is put into this. Like, it is a ridiculously opulent product. Like, there's so much effort got into it.
I'm really curious where you think that it, like, if there will be a moment, and surely there will be, where the game makes it obvious about the sort of multiverse thing, when you think that's going to jump back open and we're going to see more. Obviously, like you say, you've got further in the story, so you've had a bit more exposure to Zack, but do you feel like there's a big moment coming of like, boom, we're wide open, like we've been expecting basically since the beginning of this game, since the end of Remake? Is there a big moment coming? What's that going to be?
Well, yeah, we should talk about predictions and going forward stuff, because it's like, they said beforehand that this is going to go through to the Forgotten City, so it's like, we assumedly get what happens in the Forgotten City, and then they'll have to decide what they're going to do for part 3. But yeah, I have my own theories at the minute based on things that I think, depending on where you are in Costa del Sol, you might not have had, you're about to have a scene that is very like, ooh, that's kind of cool. I don't know, have you had a scene with Red and Aerith in a hotel room yet?
No, I've literally, I've literally just got to the point where it's like, you can play puzzle version of card game or shoot targets. And I'm like, okay.
Oh my God. So. They do dog football at one point as well. This is you can do bird dog football. It's just Rocket League, but you're playing as Red 13. But yeah, they do like the story scenes that you get every now and then. Like I said, there's one in Costa del Sol. There's some of them a bit later when you're climbing Mont Carrel. That's so intriguing, and I think they know exactly what they're doing with those scenes. Where I was like, oh, that gets me thinking so much, and I love that stuff. The question I think is whether they pay that off this game, or they use that momentum to tease part three.
That's the concern.
Yeah, where we are at the minute, or where I am, like it's lots of teasers. It's lots of like, we're giving you bits and pieces to try and figure out what we're doing here. And I think I figured that out, but it would need to be like a, you'd have to catch up to where I am, and then we could theorize together. Mm. But I think I have a feeling of what they're doing. And honestly, if they pull it off, it totally works. And so I'm glad of that, because I was so worried with all the potential multiverse stuff, whatever it is. Can you actually nail a message of environmentalism and all the thematics that are supposed to be in there from the original one? Like you said, they strip back the eco-terrorism stuff. But can you still nail that message kind of thing about abusing the planet and the live stream and all that kind of stuff? But yeah, what do you think about the going forward? Like, what do you want from a part three? And what do you think they're how are they going to handle the rest of this one?
Yeah, I feel like if I had to predict it from where I am now, just based on my playthrough, I would probably say this entry in the trilogy that this is going to be is probably going to be the one that might be the most true to the original game. Mm. Because as I say, I've not had any other story beats that you've had. So going off my experience, I'm just kind of like, well, there's one scene at the beginning. I have a feeling that probably won't kick in properly until the end of Rebirth. That's when the big like twist is going to come that we've been waiting for the whole game. Mm-hmm. And then, I know we basically said this coming in out of Remake, or the next game is going to be the crazy one where everything's different. Yep. But maybe this third game, and I don't know what the general feeling on this, but I would put money down that it's called Reunion, right?
I would assume so, yeah.
That's probably where things go nuts, because that's the part of the game where you can probably play with it the most. Like, after the Forgotten City, there's a lot of revisiting areas and stuff like that to get the huge material and these sort of things. So I wonder what you can do with that to make it more interesting and make it more different and interject this weird multiverse stuff into it and interject Zack into the story, I guess, or whatever's going to happen. So... Mm. Yeah, my theory is that Reunion is the wild one, which ironically was my theory that Rebirth was going to be the wild one. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's just at the end of every game, we're going to have one weird Kingdom Hearts scene. But everything else is fairly run-of-the-mill.
Well, that's the thing. Obviously, don't know specifics. I don't want spoilers. I'm blocking words on Twitter and everything. But it does seem from the general scuttlebutt out there that the end of this is divisive, like, which I'm looking forward to. Like, I mean, the end of Remake was divisive.
Yeah.
And I hope that I mean, the thing that I love about it is that it is the original creative team. Like 90% or whatever of the original Final Fantasy VII creators are doing this one as well. So I'm so curious what they want to take forward and what messaging they want to have in there and what kind of questions they want us to have for the next 3-4 years until the final installment. So like, I'm there for the ride, but I think it is a bumpy ride. It's a bit smoother right now where I am, but I feel like it was like it opened smooth and then it was jarring as hell, and then now it's quite smooth again. And so I'm just curious, like how they managed to land it. But we actually didn't touch on like the gameplay stuff. We should quickly talk about just the reality of playing it. I feel like as much as the story stuff, you can get lost in that. How are you finding like team builds and like that kind of stuff?
Yeah, get lost in is absolutely the term. There are so many systems that overlap with each other in this game that it could almost be sort of too much at times, where it's like, oh, I've got weapon upgrades, but also I've got abilities that I need to use to learn them full time. And also there's these folio things that give me new abilities for each characters. And I'm just synergies. Like, there are synergy abilities and synergy commands, and I think they're different. I'm like, there's so much. It is very similar to Remake, and it took me a little while to get back into the groove with it, but when I got there, it's incredibly satisfying to play. Classic all the way. I'm sorry, it's true.
I can't believe you're on the classic. I tried it last night. I would have totally gone for classic if they pause time every time, but they auto play it, and then I guess you pause when your ATB bar is full.
Yeah, when you open the command menu, the game grinds down to a crawl so you can input commands. But then you just go back to... You can still hammer the square button. I mean, I'm not just leaving it. But like that, like I like the ability to bring up and sort of command the party. That's what I'm here for. And all of that, just sort of shuffling all of that, the stagger and the pressure. And I'm having good fun, you know, just messing around, killing stuff and playing with materia builds. And yeah, it's good. There is a lot that could almost be overwhelming.
When you mentioned the synergy stuff, it took me a while to realize the distinction between like you want to charge up and get like synergy points that are the little divots.
That took me a bit.
Yeah, under like a character's name versus just holding R1 and doing synergy attacks in general, which they've tweaked how fast you earn ATB. Because I feel like 9/10, you get a bunch of materia that will make an AI character do their abilities like over the course of the game.
Yeah, like autocast, yeah.
Yeah, like auto stuff, which there was autocasting in Remake, but I felt like the party was more on it in the original, whereas like in this one, they will just hang the hell back and not even charge their ATB until you tell them to. But the R1 moves, the synergy moves, which aren't the charge moves, they're just like standard ones that you can do, they seem to give you more ATB because I guess it's an excuse to work as a party.
That makes sense.
Which makes sense, but they barely spell that out. Like, it's sort of getting the whole team's ATB up at once has been something that's taken me a long time to get used to in terms of how fast I'm switching between everybody. And like trying to be on it with like, okay, let me switch to this person. They play like this. I'll do this move, then I'll switch and I'll do this. And like putting a ward down as Aerith and then switching to red and then doing some defense so I get his vengeance mode or whatever. Like, I think there's a lot to juggle in a great way. But it's like, it can be overwhelming.
Yeah, it presents interesting problems to you, but not necessarily sort of nudges you in the direction of solutions. You just kind of have to figure it out, almost to a degree that's probably not helpful, because there've been opportunities where it's like enemies that you can't get close to for whatever reason, either they're flying or they're just too dangerous to get too close to, because they might, you know, knock you flat and you can't input a command for a certain amount of time. So trying to deal with that without the game being like, this is how you attack or build up your ATB from afar or get into the air. That took me a while. I've said this before, I play as Tifa a lot. She's very ground-based. I'm like, I can't do it. And then, okay, oh, it's this that gets her like an uppercut. That's how I get up there. And then I've got to juggle from up there. It's fun once you get it going, but yeah, I can imagine that some people are like, I'm struggling. I can imagine that.
Yeah, because like, I don't know if you played much of the demos beforehand, but I did the Sephiroth demo and then I dabbled a bit in the Junon one. But I remember doing the weird flying fish that you fight that gets you up to Junon, the one that the dolphin helps you with. There's that fight in the demo. I could not figure out how to get in the air to fight it. Whereas like in the game, you can do it only if you do the Chadley tutorial thing. It spells out like do a dash and then hold square. And I was like, I would never have got that. I would just never have realized that's how I get Cloud in the air. And then I can stay in the air for the rest of the fight.
I might not even know that, to be honest. And I've done all the Chadley things. But to be fair, anytime he talks, I'm like, shut up.
Oh, dude, yeah. It's just like, oh, my God. There's one thing, because he has the alter ego or whatever as well when you're in combat. Yeah. And it's like, I like the idea of, like, Chadley overall, but, like, the more that those characters talk.
Stupid patter between the two of them, yeah.
I'm like, stop talking over my party trying to talk.
Hey, actually, while we're podding about it, on a related note, I tweeted about this, but I don't know if you might have a good sound setup at home. Maybe you've got surround sound or whatever.
Headphones for the most part.
Okay, headphones. That makes sense. That also makes sense. So I'm largely playing just through my soundbar on my TV. Sound in this game is awful.
Balancing it
is really bad. There's no options to tweak your sound setup. So it's just designed for surround sound all of the time. So if you're playing through TV speakers or a soundbar, the ship is the worst part for it. Every NPC around you is talking about something unrelated. It's just, I can't hear what's going on, like the cacophony of noise. When you go and do the special fiend battles that you need to do in the open world, and Chadley's robot assistant, whatever her name is, starts telling you about the creature, can't hear any of it. Like, the music's going, the sound effects are going, she's just mumbling away in the corner somewhere.
Yeah.
Like, the sound balance in this game is really bad. And it seems like it's specifically designed for headphones and, you know, stereo surround sound, and that's it. Because when I've got headphones on, it's fine.
It's worth throwing in that, like, that sort of final, like, layer of polish that would be, like, before a game gets released. Like, there are issues with the graphics modes as well. Like, the performance mode, because I can't play on 30 FPS anymore. Unless you force me, I can't do it. So, like, I'm on 60, but this game takes such a knock to its resolution when you're on performance mode. Like, characters are so, the whole thing is so blurry, and faces don't have that.
I turned it on for about 10 seconds and was like, nope, back to graphics mode.
But I was like, I can't, it's like I'm weighing up horribleness, because I'm like, it's horrible looking at this thing in like what looks like about 720p with faces that haven't loaded that last layer of texture. They look like they're made of clay in certain scenes. Or going with 30 FPS, which just feels really sluggish and like it's skipping frames to my brain now because I play too much stuff in 60. But that, they've already addressed it. I saw the director, I think it's Naoki Hamaguchi, saying that they're doing a patch. He said that they're aware that the performance mode makes some characters look ugly and they want want to make it look better. So I was like, sure, you can mask it as that. Sure. I feel like you needed to have that one final push to sort that out. Because yeah, the audio stuff as well, on headphones especially, the sound of like equipment moving is so much louder than everything else. And it's like Final Fantasy 16, where like it became a meme that you could hear like Clive's chest heaving under its leather. Like, it's like that. Every character has like a whole sort of, I don't know, like a wandering traveler's bag of like things dangling off them and everything else. Yeah, there's just so much random diegetic sound.
It gets worse when you like running around with a bunch of people and they're all like running into crates and stuff, and there's just like plant pots flying around the environment really loudly behind you.
That physics stuff is so random. Like, certain parts of the
very
world,
very funny.
Yeah, like scatter everywhere, other parts don't. Like when I finally got to the Costa del Sol, there's like there's a welcome area, and Barrett and Red were just running through plant pots and scattering books everywhere.
Hitting it with a Segway and a plant, like this giant plant pot just goes flying into the air. I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's not how physics works.
No.
Speaking of not how physics works, while we're doing sort of these kind of nitpicks as well, whilst I am wandering all around the world doing everything, I just have to say, wandering around the world doing everything looks stupid most of the time. Like, the actual clambering around, like, the rock faces and stuff looks so bad. It looks like the parkour scene from The Office. Like, constantly, like, nobody looks like they're doing anything that makes any sense. You're just constantly moving in elevation in weird ways. It's really weird. The characters don't fit with the ground most of the time.
I don't think back when they did remake, they would have obviously known that they needed to do some sort of open world thing, but, like, I feel like they've had to split the difference. I think that's why a lot of the cities are so authored, because I imagine that, you know, they were maybe put in development alongside remake or just after remake, and then you have the arbitrary open world bulk in between, and it's like, okay, we need a way to get around this. But you're very like, you have to turn something on in the options. You can turn on, I forget what they call it, but it's like a proximity icon that will then, it lights up if you can actually interact with the thing that's in front of you, so that you know what you can climb. But like they also
handy,
have
I guess,
like,
but
yeah, they have like those little green icons as well, if it's like a climbable thing. Like, obviously the yellow paint is a bit of a meme at this point. And like, it's just a weird split where they've kind of had to go, like, how do we actually get the party through this open world and have more interactivity that would be more associated with a modern game, but then still have it's still the same engine from the original. So like, there's not that much you can do with it. Because there's stuff where like, I would love to be able to just jump a small gap, but you can't. Like, you'll just jump down and you've got to go around and back up. And like,
yeah, that's the thing. Like, the jumping off stuff looks ridiculous every time, and you got to jump down a bunch of little ledges. It looks absurd.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, I think it's a high bar across the board.
Totally.
I do think the open world is the weakest stuff, just because it just feels the most arbitrary. But I do, the thing is though, like, quite a lot of the best character conversations are in the open world stuff, and where they're just remarking on something from their past or something that they've seen or a shared memory or whatever. And I love that stuff. That's kind of why I'm there. Like, I actually started to love all the little hotel scenes. Like, give me the excuse of the downtime, get everybody in a room, let's all just check in with each other. Like, I love that stuff so much. So I think it opens really well on the calm scene. But like, yeah, it's a weird beat. I think they're trying to satisfy so many different things here. And even on the business end, you've got like how important this is to Square Enix's bottom line, and like 7 Remake saved them in 2020 after the Avengers game bombed so hard. And it's like, they need this to be the everything game, because they don't have that many other first party games that are going to be received like this, so they need to make sure it ticks all the boxes as much as possible. But overall though, we shall wrap for now. Let's do more little check-ins, because I feel like I'm going to hammer this thing. I've got a day off tomorrow, so I'm going to sit on this for the rest of the day, and then I'll see where I go. We'll check back in either when both of us are finished, or we can check back in once you've...
It's going to take me a little bit longer, because obviously I've got a lot more to do. I'm doing everything, but also I've just got a lot going on. But I intend on getting through this kind of as quick as possible, for spoiler's sake. And also, it just like has me in a vice grip, to be honest. Even with these little sort of nitpicks that we've got, like, all of my free time is going on that.
Yeah. It's like all I'm thinking of is, I'm either thinking in music, I have the gold source of music in my head, or I'm just thinking of, I can't wait to do another boss fight, or I can't wait to get stuck back in again. But yeah, there's no rush. We'll do a final chat once we're both through it and see where we're at with whatever the hell happens towards the end of this game. For now, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Cy White.
My name is Cy, and I endorse this 7-foot-long sword.
As well you should. Let's collectively mosey, and we'll catch you soon. Goodbye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.